My name is Jerry, and this is the Wild Eye Podcast. Walrus and a polar bear. Hello, everybody. I am back at the Wild Eye office. It's Monday, and I came back from Svalbard, I think, 3-4 days ago. And I'm already checked in for my next flight heading to Brazil tomorrow, where I'm hosting a Pantanal photo tour. So the last few months have been quite crazy in every sense of the word. Loads of travel, loads of photography, loads of hotels, and loads of new items on my to-do list, both from a Wild Eye point of view, from a Mindset and Performance Collective point of view, and personally. So the travel's been interesting. Still love it. I love the travel side of it. There's certain clarity and just gratitude that comes with it. But that's a discussion for another time. Now, before I get into the walrus and the polar bear, shout out to Bruce. Bruce, if you're driving to work and you're listening to this, I'm back. Okay, I'm back on the podcast. I will make sure to keep them ticking so that you've got something to listen to when you drive to work. No, so we had a great, great Svalbard trip. The group, for me, all in all, was probably one of the nicest ones from a balance point of view we've had in a long time. There was no extremes, no issues. It was just great. Lovely group. Everybody was there for the experience. And the photography was great all around. But it was just the conversations and the vibe, just amazing. So thank you to everybody who joined that. It was really, really special. And I can confirm to all of you listening that Svalbard is still one of my favorite places anywhere in the world. I remember arriving there for the first time in 2013, I think it was. Yes, 2013. And then it felt to me like I stepped into a movie, and it's still the same. There's something beautifully harsh and wonderfully wild about this place. It never fails to kind of get under my skin, and the experience is a lot more than photography. Now, I've spoken about that a lot the last while, about the experiential side of photography, the experience of photography, and that's what it is. The season in which we hosted this last trip was different. It was kind of autumn going towards winter, which means that we actually had sunsets and sunrises. So it wasn't pitch dark in the evenings, it was like a deep, deep blue, but still, you could actually sleep, and it was dark that you couldn't photograph. So considering the time of year, we did pretty damn well. We had 7 polar bears, and the first one was a little sausage up on the hill. We couldn't get close. It was very, very far. But the other ones were all pretty decent, and now I'm going to just drop this now. I am going to, as soon as I get back from the Pantanal, I think it's around about the 18th, 19th of October, I'm here for a while. And one of the things that I want to then dig into in a lot of detail is all the talk about these new regulations in Svalbard. So many people ask, did it affect the experience? We don't know if we should come to Svalbard. Could you get close to the bears and the walrus and all these kind of things? Now, I'm not going to go too deep down that rabbit hole right now, but just a few thoughts which would lead into the podcast, which I'll do when I'm back. It didn't spoil the experience at all, right? I don't think so. Because one of the things I mentioned to someone on our second bear, it was quite far off. We couldn't get closer. We couldn't put the Zodiacs in because of where we were. We couldn't get closer with the boat. So I think we were about 340 meters or something. But it was decent. I mean, with a long lens, you can get nice animal and environment shots. And people are like, oh, yeah, but the regulations are spoiling this. And I said, no. Let's just think about this, right? Over the last 12 years that I've been hosting Svalbard expeditions, we've had the majority of our sightings was that, right? The majority of our sightings was far away. Some were pixel bears where you, even on an 800 mil, you get a pixel in your camera. But the majority of the sightings is far. You need to look at where you're at and what the natural ecosystem is and does. So it was good sightings, right? And it would have been even when the regulations were not there. I think the outliers, those moments where you could Zodiac right into the face of a bear, is something we might not have again. And I'll dig into this more in a podcast in a couple of weeks from now. But I don't think it spoiled the experience at all. Would we have wanted to get closer in one or two sightings? Yes, absolutely. right? But the regulations do allow, once you get a certain distance from the coast of Svalbard, you're not in Svalbard anymore. So the pack ice is probably where most people are going to play. And if I look back at the season, a lot of people did play up there. I have a gut feel some of them pushed the boundary a little bit, which is just wrong. But you can still get amazing experiences, right? You can. And we had one particular morning where we woke up for two mornings in a row at 6 o'clock, where we had to wake people up and say there's a polar bear outside, because we would anchor in these fjords, these little bays, right? And on the second morning, the first morning, Peter found a bear, so we called it Peter's bear. And the next morning, there was a mom and a youngster. And they were walking along the coast, like on the shore. And we then positioned the boat in a half circle on the other side. So we had shots of them coming. If they kept walking, right, and they hugged the shore, they would have come pretty close with amazing colors in the background. Beautiful Arctic landscape, like pinky, orangey colors in the back. Would have been amazing. Probably on a 7200, you could have gotten some pretty good stuff. But she decided to head right and head over the hill. So we got some pretty nice shots there. But other than that, I think the regulations is a thing, right? But the sad and unfortunate thing is that these rules, I think that for me, there's two things. And again, I'm not going to go too deep, but just a few thoughts. Is these rules are often made by people sitting in an office, right, who are looking at the paper of it, and they don't understand the reality of what happens out in the field. I think that's the concern. I think the second concern for me is that these rules, as they are made, is always made based on the lowest common denominator. Who are the idiots that fuck things up for everybody else? Who are the people that push the animal and changes the behavior? Who are the people that take their big vessel into fast ice, which they shouldn't be able to do? Who are those people, right? And the rules are unfortunately made for those few. And the argument is the same thing. Last year in Svalbard, and I did a podcast episode on this a couple of months ago, a year ago maybe, yeah, on drones. So the question to me, to you, would be, can you fly a drone and drone photograph and drone video wildlife ethically? The answer is yes, and we all know that. Right, it is possible to do it ethically, 100%. But it's the lowest common denominator. It's those people who have no ethics. It's those people that don't give a shit for wildlife, for the in a guide instance, for the guests with them, or for the future of the experience that we're trying to create. Right. So all in all, for me, the regulations didn't really affect the experience as much as I deep down thought it would. But I do have questions, and there's certain instances where you can get amazing and pretty close game viewing, let's call it that, in Africa, in the Arctic, whatever it is, and not affect the animal's behavior, where you don't have a net negative impact on that situation. So we had a lot of discussions on this on the boat, and with Christian and Bo as well. But like I said, let's ice that conversation. See what I did there? Svalbard ice. Anyway, so, and I'll do that when I come back from Brazil. I've got a couple of other interesting topics as well. And this often happens when we're out on trips and stuff. I create a note on my phone, and I just call it Svalbard 2025 mind dump, and anything, books to read, podcasts to listen to, apps to check out, interesting quotes. I have this massive, after every trip I ever do, I have that. So some of the other episodes coming up once I'm back, I'm going to try and record one or two more when I'm in Cuiabá later in the week, waiting for the Pantanal trip, but is some new apps and AI editing software that is very interesting to me, right? Some of the apps I gave to people on the trip so that they could use them very successfully and with a lot of creative flair, mind you. But also, the idea we spoke about, culling your images, and what a ball ache it is. Oh my goodness. I get to a point where I'm so far behind because of all the travels that then going to sit down and having to... The editing's the fun part, right? There's a creative endeavor. You can do stuff. You can be creative. You can have fun with it. But culling images, finding the right ones to edit and throwing them out is such a pain in the ass. I found software that can do it for you. But, and I tried it. I tried a very quick dry run on an Iceland directory. It might struggle with landscape and wildlife because of the nature of the genre. But that's going to come up in a future episode. And then just a couple of ideas on creativity and shooting and so on and so forth. But for now, though, I thought just to get something back on, Bruce, this one is because of you. I'm kidding, Bruce. It was great to have you on the trip. And the banter around the podcast and me not doing episodes is well received, even though I do claim travel is the result. But we're back. So the walrus and polar bear. Now, during the lectures that we do on board, right, Bowen Christian has often spoken about how polar bears hunt and what would happen, for example, if they find a haul out of walrus. So that's when a whole bunch of walrus go onto land and they just lay there. Imagine the side of the Mara River with a bunch of hippos, but with big teeth, right? They're just laying down there. So a polar bear is not just going to charge in and jump on one because he's going to get his ass kicked, right? The weight discrepancy, the ease of the amount of them is not going to happen. So what they've been known to do, and we've heard this in the lectures we've done on board many, many times, is that when it's a haul out of walrus, what they might do is they might walk at the herd, the pod, the group of walrus, and they might do a mock charge, which, like with most animals in a herd, if one tends to freak out, they all freak out, and these walrus would then try and get to the water, basically a stampede, right? And during this process, one or two of them might get hurt, they might be left on the beach, and then the polar bear would do his thing. So what we had is, during a Svalbard trip, we would normally try and do a few things. Obviously, polar bear sightings, reindeer sightings, maybe walk towards reindeer, get some good landscape shots. Arctic fox is an anomaly. They pop up absolutely anywhere. And then walrus as well, in the water but on land. So we would land safe distance and then have views from the beach at the walrus. It's pretty cool, right? But these are some of the big things we try and tick during these trips. So at the first haul out spot we had down in Hinlopen Strait, we got there early in the morning and they were not home. Because it's an interesting time. It's a change of season this time of year. So we thought, okay, cool. We've got one more big one on the way home. We'll stop there and see if they're home. So we're sailing up, and from a distance, we can see with binos, yes, the walrus are there. So we're like, okay, cool, guys. The plan is we're going to anchor the boat, get your gear on, get in the Zodiacs, go land and go and look at the walrus, which would have been, I think it's our second or third last day. So we're kind of slowly thinking about heading back to Longyearbyen. So just as we're about to start prepping to get into the Zodiacs, Bo comes out and is like, sorry, we cannot land. There is a polar bear as well. So this was the first time for me when I was like, oh, come on, you're kidding. There's a polar bear? We wanted to see the walrus on land. What the hell is the thing doing there? Right? But obviously we're not going to say that because a polar bear is pretty damn awesome. So we get close with the boat. I think the boat was probably about 350 meters. We drop the anchor and now we're going to wait because one of a few things can happen. While we're waiting, the polar bear can get up and leave, and once it's gone, then we can land, because law is you cannot land when you know there's a polar bear, and that's been even before the regulations. So the first thing that can happen is this polar bear could bugger off and we could go and land and see our walrus. The second thing would be that nothing happens. He just lays there because this bear's about maybe call it 200, maybe 300 meters just to the left as we're looking at it on the beach sleeping. So we can just sit there and nothing would happen. Or third option is what happened. So we sit there. This is about, I think it's about just after lunch, so 2 o'clock-ish, right? And everybody's out looking, taking some pictures at distance. You can get some nice stuff of the walrus, beautiful backgrounds, colors changing. And I think we waited for about 2 or 3 hours. And if I'm not mistaken, we were just about to say, cool, let's call this because nothing's happened, let's go. As this happened, the bear gets up. And now it starts walking towards this haul out of walrus. Now, as we're looking at it, the bear's on the left. He's walking to the right towards the big group of walrus, which is mostly males. Big-ass males, lazy males, smelly and grumpy males, all clumped together. Right? So it's a clump of walrus in the middle. Now, they normally don't give a shit. They can just do their thing. And further to the left, just a little bit away, is another group of females and youngsters. Now, the moms won't normally take the young walrus into the male group because, I mean, a male weighs a lot. If he can roll over and squish a youngster, it's not great. So you have these two groups of walrus, and then far off on the beach to the left, there's another group. But in this group towards which this polar bear was walking, there must be about 300 or so walrus. Bo and Christian did a quick type of count, and we're looking at about 300. Anyway, so we're at about 300 meters or so because we can't get closer because of the depth of the beach just in front of us. So we're on the Stockholm, on our vessel. We're slowly getting closer, and we kind of hold there. And this bear is now walking as we're looking at in the beach, on the beach, in front of the big group of male walruses. Just that in itself, the scale of that was absolutely amazing to see, right? Polar bear, biggest land-based predator in the world, and these walrus make her look, it was a female, makes her look tiny. So great animal and environment shots. The background, you've got this beautiful dark metal blue kind of sky. There's some icebergs on the horizon in the distance, a little bit of blue color. It's a beautiful scene, right? So as this female walks between the water and the walrus on the beach to the right, the all the walrus males, they like get a bit edgy. So they're kind of squirming and moving around, and then they get irritated, and one would poke the other one with the teeth because they're now upset. But then they kind of settle in. But then she keeps on walking towards the right, and this little group of females and youngsters, they freak out, and they basically stampede, roll, waddle, whatever you call it, into the water. So the images in this all is narrative. It's beautiful storytelling because you have the big group of walrus at the back. You got the polar bear walking in front. And then eventually, once she's walked all the way to the water where the females and the youngsters went in, we have these images of this bear looking at the water and all these walrus heads looking back at her. Just, I mean, just amazing wildlife photography narrative, right? So she then walks a little bit further back and there's lays down basically in front of the big group of walrus. So this scene is just, it's amazing. Because now you have about, how do I do this? Maybe 40, 50 female and youngsters swimming up and down the beach, all being panicky. Like, did you see that? Did you see that? Did you see that? And the males are just like, meh. Some of them fall asleep again. So in itself, just that entire scene played out. There's beautiful videos we got. The photography was amazing. And I've had this now for about 10 years working with Christian and Bo. In Greenland last year, we had one like that as well. Is we'll have a sighting every once in a while where we're going around kind of checking things, making sure everybody's in place and doing their thing. And we just look at each other and kind of shake our head. And this was one of those. So Christian has been doing this for a very long time. And this is only the second time he's seen that kind of behavior. It was my first one. I've heard about it. I've seen some pictures of it. But it was a really, really cool sighting. From a ecosystem, behavior, interaction, environment point of view. Now, would we have liked to get closer? Yes, but we could not. It was nothing to do with the regulations. We were there, right? So Magnus, the boat's captain, I mean, the way he maneuvers the Stockholm is just, it's the stuff of legend. It really, really is. So he would keep on circling around because now with the anchor up, we get pushed left to right and he would just keep on circling at that distance. So An amazing sighting, and one of those where you're reminded that you can only shoot what you see. And I've said this a few times to people on trips now, and if anybody from the Brazil trip coming up is listening, you're going to hear me say this, right? There's a difference between a polar bear in its environment and an environment with a polar bear in it. It's dramatically different. The way you photograph it, your lens choice, how you process it, how you present it, is very different for those two instances. A polar bear in its environment or an environment with a polar bear in it, right? And this was an environment which was just stupid, crazy, amazing with a polar bear in it. So I've seen people on the Greenland trip, for example, last year, we had this beautiful polar bear sighting and you have a polar bear that's probably about 10% of the frame. So that is an environment with a polar bear in it, right? Don't try and crop and turn it into a portrait. It's not that, right? You need to honor the scene. You need to honor the type of photography you're doing and not try and push it in a direction that isn't what it was, if that makes sense. So that was probably our highlight sighting for the trip. It was absolutely spectacular. I'll probably, on my flight from Joburg to Sao Paulo tomorrow, I'll start editing some of those because it's just been a bit of a whirlwind. But amazing sighting, and I'm glad that the group got something like that because they were really nice. It was a phenomenal group. It was great. So some of our other polar bear sightings included a polar bear on a reindeer kill, which the reindeer had a net, like a fishing net, wrapped around its horns. So we can only hypothesize, but there was a couple of suggestions of how it got there. And in that same sighting, we had two, possibly three Arctic foxes running around. So that was some nice long-distance stuff. There was another polar bear on a kill. We thought it might be a young beluga, maybe, or a seal. Then we had the mom and the youngster. So it was great. Some one phenomenal bearded seal, which we got very, very close to on the ice. That was wonderful. So yeah, all in all, just a great trip. It is, and I wish I could make people understand this. It's not just about the wildlife photography. It's not even just about the landscape photography. The Svalbard experience is just that. It's an experience. It's above and beyond experientially what you, for example, get on a normal safari. Now, please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying normal safari like it's a bad thing. But the point of the matter here is that in Svalbard, when you're on the Stockholm with me, you're basically switched on the whole time. It's intimate. It's close. Whenever you go to bed, there's a very good chance we wake you up at any point in time saying, hey, there's a bear. Hey, there's a blue whale. Hey, there's belugas. Hey, there's white-beaked dolphins, which we had on the last day, which was just stunning, right? Whereas on a safari, when you go to your room and you switch off, you're done. You disconnect while you sleep from it. The immersive and holistic experience that is the Svalbard expeditions I host makes it something very difficult to explain. Like, the photography is amazing. The conversations are better, right? The moments where you stand on deck or sit at the back of the deck. I mean, Stuart, Mike, Eric, you guys will know that sitting on the back of those, at the deck, on those chairs and just watching the Arctic go by, it's probably better than therapy. I'm not even joking, right? So the whole Svalbard thing to me is, it's something I wish every single one of you could experience. It is that good. It is that good. Now, next year, Andrew and I are co-hosting together. And we're going to turn it into a bit of a workshop where, for the people on there, we're going to have, I'm thinking at this stage, seven themes that we shoot towards. Because you can shoot all day long in that place. But we're going to have themes, we're going to have workshops and notes and stuff like that. And that's going to be fun. And then we also recently confirmed the 2027 dates is already live and bookable. It's from the 3rd to the 13th of May, almost said March, May, which is very early season, but it is beautiful Arctic. It's early season, it's white, it's snowy, the bears are hunting the ice. It's a beautiful time. It really, really is. And I'm super excited because Johanna and I are hosting that together. And if you've ever traveled with us together or you know us individually, you can be assured of a very good time. It's a lot of joking, but some great photography. So if you're keen on any of those, please let me know. I'll also talk about some of the other Arctic trips when I'm back from the Pantanal. Just in love with the place. It's, you get places that speak to you on a different level, and this is one for me. Stu sent me a message as well, saying that it's a unique destination. It's pretty amazing. This is from someone who does a lot of time in the bush. Brenda, who joined us from Canada, she actually joined from the Journal of Wildlife Photography, and I might have some very interesting and exciting news around the journal very soon. I have a Zoom this afternoon. But Brenda joined from there. That's where she learned about me and the trip. And at the end of the trip, she mentioned as well, and she did a lot of bird photography, a lot of landscape photography. At the end of the trip, we all present 12 images, and her raw files of the landscapes were just gorgeous. It was really a strong collection. But she said that it's one of the best trips of her life. Now, that kind of stuff almost brings me to tears when people say that. That's what it's about. It's not, this was the best image I've taken in my life. This was one of the best experiences of my life. That's what it's about. So, anyway, I am in the office today. It's Monday, like I mentioned. Have a meeting coming up at 9:30, one at 11, and then some Zooms this afternoon, and then pack for the Pantanal. It's very different. I've had an interesting year. I've gone from, I did the US road trip, which was a private guided trip through Utah and Arizona, then Borneo, humid rainforest, then Kenya, then Svalbard, and tomorrow heading to Brazil. It's been a nice and diverse year from a weather point of view. And then I'm home for about 6 weeks and then off to Amsterdam, Turkey, and Tenggile for a pretty unique private guided experience as well. But yeah, good to be back. Bruce, thank you for the push. And I will chat to you guys soon. Like I mentioned, I'm going to try and do a few episodes on kind of the apps and stuff we spoke about when I'm in Cuiabá on, I think, Thursday. And I'll schedule those out as well. And then some more serious and deeper, borderline, I think, controversial, talking about all these regulations and stuff. But we'll look at it from both sides. I think it's worth it, and I think it's necessary. So I'll be back soon. If you guys have any questions, you can follow me on Instagram, all the social media channels, Jerry van der Walt, or then my email, Jerry, G-E-R-R-Y, at wildeye.com. That's wild-eye.com. If you have any questions, topics you'd like me to look at in the future, or if you want to find out about how you can join me in some of the amazing Arctic places where I host expeditions. As always, thank you for lending me your ears, and I will chat in the next episode. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye. Bye for now.